Disclaimer, I am a counseling student, I am not a mental health professional, and I cannot give or offer mental health services. You are listening to Good, You. I'm your host, Samantha, and today I'm sitting down with Rayshawn Ledet as we discuss counseling men. There is definitely a stigma with mental health counseling or seeking mental health treatment, and it's especially stigmatized against males. So I wanted to sit down with Rayshawn and discuss this. And we also get into the importance of just seeking mental health help in general and the importance of seeking counseling. So I hope that y'all enjoy today's episode. Let's get started. So hello, Ray. I'm sitting here with Rayshawn Ledet. Okay. And he is a clinical social worker. And we're going to be talking today about counseling men. So thank you so much for being here with me today. Can you tell us a little about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely. Thank you, Sam, for having me. So again, my name is Rayshawn Ledet. You guys could just call me Ray. And I'm a licensed clinical social worker within the state of New Jersey. And right now, I work full-time in my private practice called Mental and Mind. It's all virtual, again, providing therapy services to teenagers and adults living within the state of New Jersey. And again, it's all telehealth, so all online at this time.
Awesome, awesome. So how long have you been licensed for?
I've been a licensed clinical social worker since 2021. And I officially opened up my private practice in March of 2021, but I was just kind of doing it on the side. I was still working for my full-time job at an outpatient facility. And then ultimately in December of 2021, that's when I decided to invest full-time into my private practice, you know, getting a website, logo, all that great stuff. And yeah, I've been doing it ever since.
Awesome. So you came into the time of COVID, like you were licensed already when telehealth was getting into the flow of things.
I would say like the real height of it was when that 2020 was going on, and the people that had the private practice going, most of them had to figure out how to do, how to utilize telehealth. Cause I remember hearing about it before of telehealth being an option. And this is way before the pandemic and everything. And I literally remember myself thinking like, oh, that's interesting. Never going to need it, but okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 2020 happened, and then, but yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, what made you enter this line of work?
Ultimately, I would say my mother is a social worker, and she's the one that got me interested in the field. But ultimately, what made me decide to become a therapist was I just had a really, really great experience at my internship when I was in the master's program. My old supervisor, now friend, Peter McClary, he's a really, really good therapist, like really, really good. And at the outpatient facility, you know, just, you know, being under him, just seeing all the different therapy styles and just really growing a love for it. And honestly, I believe I have a sixth sense for, you know, emotions, like all of it. So that internship in particular really kind of grew my love for therapy as a whole.
Yeah, definitely. I completely understand. I'm really excited for my practicum and internship coming up soon. So look forward to having those experiences. So today we're going to be talking about counseling men. And I think that I'm sure something you're aware of is there's really high stigma already in mental health, a negative stigma. But then when it comes to men being in counseling, it can tend to be worse. So can we talk about what toxic masculinity is and how do you think it plays a role in that negative stigma of men seeking mental health help?
Absolutely. And, you know, when I hear the term toxic masculinity, honestly, it would confuse me because you know how if whether you're in school or just honestly anywhere, if you hear a word that you like don't know or haven't heard of at all, depending on how it's used, the context, you can kind of figure it out, like what it means. I've heard toxic masculinity used in so many different ways, so many different forms. It's to the point where I'm like, it appears that if a man does something that someone doesn't approve of, it's applicable. Oh, that's toxic masculinity. So I actually was doing some Googles. And from what I've gotten here, I actually have it in front of me. According to the Oxford Languages, which is the world's leading dictionary publisher that, you know, we use, if you put it in Google, it's Oxford. It defines toxic masculinity as harmful beliefs about the way men should behave. And when also going on, again, same definitions with masculinity and even femininity, masculinity, the definition is qualities or attributes regarded as characteristics of men. And for femininity, qualities or attributes regarded as characteristics of women. So the same thing, but of course, one for men, one for women, and then just bringing in the term toxic, which is a adjective, a word or phrase naming an attribute added to or grammatically related to a noun to modify or describe it. So I go and say, okay, let's focus on the describing aspect. If for toxic, if masculinity and femininity are a part of it, are attributes that describes men and women. If we were to say, you know, those things are toxic, toxic masculinity, toxic femininity, that essentially says, hey, I'm toxic just for existing as a man. You're toxic just for existing as a woman. So it's like, okay, so let's kind of take a step back from that. Let's focus on when it says, instead of being to describe it, how about if we focus on the modify under toxic? Again, the adjective is a word or phrase naming an attribute added to or grammatically related to a noun to modify or describe it. We went down the describing path. So let's look at the modifying path. That's when I believe the modifying aspect of it occurs within our society, because if we cycle it all the way back up to the Oxford definition, it says harmful beliefs about the way men should behave. Now, if somebody, man or woman, is kind of saying, let's say a woman, for example, if someone were to ask her, hey, what type of guy do you want? And she says, I want a masculine man. And you're like, okay, what is a masculine man to you, right? And if she were to say, for example, a masculine man is someone that, you know, if they look at him wrong, you know, he's going to, you know, be ready to, you know, fight and attack and everything like that. Because again, the Oxford definition is harmful beliefs about the way men should behave. Now, if we flip it and ask a man, hey, what is your definition of a masculine man, right? And if he were to say, well, if a guy looks at me the wrong way, I got to be ready to, you know, go at it with him. So going back to the definition, harmful beliefs about the way men should behave. Because if we're just strictly focusing on the nature of being a man or even being a woman for that matter, mm-hmm. it doesn't really make sense to say, hey, just for existing, you're toxic. That's I don't know about that.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I think like it has to be how society has completely overused the term. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know for example, they tend to use it as men who cry, men can't cry, right? Toxic masculinity, or showing emotions at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to do with why they're staying away from seeking mental health help, because that has to do with going somewhere to express your emotions and figure them out.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And again, like sounding like a broken record of like, keep going back to the definition of harmful beliefs right. about the way men should behave. Mm-hmm. If a man is growing up in society, and you know, I work with men, during individual therapy and group therapy when I was at the outpatient facility. And, you know, these conversations would come up of, hey, you know, going through life, I was told or I saw. And men have emotions, yeah, just like women. We have emotions. We just want to be mindful how we express those emotions. Essentially, you know, if I'm having a bad day, you know, how they say leave it at the door, I can't necessarily bring my bad day into not even a workplace, but an interaction with another person and have that kind of spill over. Like if you ever saw one of those TV shows or in real life where, let's say, you know, you're chilling on the couch watching TV, somebody come in the room, slam a cabinet door, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm sorry. It's not you. It's something that happened with so-and-so. And it's like, all right, well, we still want to be mindful of that.
Right. The energy in the room shifted a little.
Uh-huh. So I think as far as, you know, having that emotional intelligence and being mindful of the way we express our emotions, because having emotions, that's just the messenger of, hey, this is how we're perceiving what's going on in our environment or internally. And our emotions are kind of acting as the display, the messenger for that, like feeling happy, sad, angry, frustrated, et cetera. But whatever emotional terrain we're in, we want to be mindful of our behavior and actions and how we're interacting with other people, because we don't want to slam cabinet doors.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so how can we turn that term toxic masculinity, right, into a more positive mindset and more positive view in society? Like, how can we reframe this term since we've already made it into something that's now means multiple things, even though it has that one definition, but now it's like overused, like I said.
I think one thing that we really know within society is we can give words or terms a lot of power. And when we talk about the word toxic, definition number one of toxic is poisonous. And definition number two is very harmful or unpleasant in a pervasive or insidious way. Mm-hmm. When you think about that as an adjective, like a descriptive type of word, and you apply it to something, that doesn't, to keep it lightly, that doesn't sound pleasant at all, like at all. So it's become one of those, like those buzzwords in society, like toxic, 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 toxic.
Yeah, yeah.
I think just being very accurate with the words we use, right? Because even like I like to call within the same like word family, like even with emotions, right? There's happy, you know, joy, excited. They're kind of within the same family, just like with anger, frustration, irritable. They're within the same family, but there's different levels to it. And I think just being mindful about the words we use, being as accurate as possible, because we don't want to add an extra scoop of intenseness to something. Because when we call something toxic, it's like, whoa, that's poisonous.
Right. Right. I think so too. And I think that we can reframe in the way that, just like we have in social media, we see that there's like these body standards that are impossible to meet. Now, like you have been seeing for years, years, decades, men being portrayed as strong and in a way that can come off as harmful because it's not an expressive and a healthy way to express emotions. And I think it has to start with how we are portraying it in society and through social media.
If one thing I would say to everyone is give therapy a good faith try, because there's so many different factors and variables and everything going on where it would be too hard to account for everything. So I would encourage and say going to therapy, utilizing resources of Google. When I don't know something, I literally type in Google how to ... whatever it may be, or even therapists near me. And since we're in a world of virtual, you know, you're not limited necessarily to your area. You can look essentially within your state of everyone that's doing telehealth and everything like that. So I would really venture into going to therapy, most, including myself, offer a free phone consultation where, you know, you guys just make sure you're the right fit for each other. So that way it's kind of like, all right, I've heard of this therapy thing. I don't know what it's about. I don't, you know, talking to people, right? But I'll give it a try. Let's just see, right? And, you know, finding someone that you like, because usually they have their bio and description and everything like that. And just kind of following through with the free consultation, because we essentially have nothing to lose.
Exactly. Like, what's the risk of calling for a free consult? Mm-hmm. And that's a good point, is that it's okay to go therapist shopping, and it's okay to feel the vibes on the phone call. It's okay if you go to the first session and maybe it clicked on the phone call, but not as much in person or over Zoom or telehealth, but it's okay to keep your options open and to find what fits you best.
Mm-hmm. And I know one of the common questions I get up in my practice, and from what I just heard in general, of, you know, why do people go to therapy? And I'll say, you know, while people may go for a number of things, pay attention to those thoughts that have been kind of floating around in your mind, where some people may say, hey, like how I like to describe it, of sometimes people go to therapy because simply they have no one that they feel comfortable talking to. Not that they don't have anyone that loves them or care about them, but for specific topics, they may not feel comfortable talking to people in their lives with about those particular topics. Some people go to learn healthy forms of coping. So for example, let's say if someone's default coping skill was to use substances and everything like that, well, everything works until it doesn't, where certain consequences start to come up. So learning healthy forms of coping, some people want to gain some insight about certain things, like certain behaviors or triggers, and they really are unsure. So being able to process that with a licensed, trained professional about some of the reasons of the why, you know, we may be responding in the present due to things of the past. And again, if you're saying, like, honestly, Ray, like, I'm hearing some of that stuff, but I'm still a little, free consultation. No real downsides can come from, you know, being introduced to this world of therapy, right? And mental health, scheduling a free consultation with the therapist. And if something comes up from there, it's like, great. Now we have the insight to address it. And if everything's going pretty well and we're like, we're good to go, now we know.
Yeah. And you're so right. You could have where you're able to talk to someone about traumatic event that happened a long time ago that you don't feel comfortable sharing with people now, or where you have relationship issues and you don't know how to express it to that person. And mm-hmm. you're able to go to a non-biased third party and talk to them about it. And like, there's not a lot to lose in that situation.
Mm-hmm. And no, you're on point. And I want to give the listeners a therapy gym, I'll call it that, of if you're unsure about something or stuck on a thought, like a thought just kind of keeps kind of popping up in your mind, try saying it out loud. Maybe even try recording yourself, you know, the voice recorder on your phone, or writing it out. The reason is because, you know, oftentimes that internal dialogue that goes on in our mind is a lot different when we hear ourselves or see it on paper or we're listening. That's why, on a TV show or in real life, have you ever heard someone engage in a conversation and they're like, hey, Sam, I sound like my mother, or I sound like my, like you finally start to hear yourself. And then you start to be like, wait a second, I perceive that situation this way, but when I hear it from this person, or I start to hear myself, I'm starting to see some things.
Yeah, the connections, once you start, are unreal and sometimes very annoying, because you're like, wow, I've been doing this for a while now and it's just clicking. But yeah, I get a lot of those connections. It's great. It really is. The self-awareness is unmatched.
You know, and when you talk about the self-awareness, as we kind of go through life, this is the first person, right? In the moment, we don't know what we look like. I mean, I guess if we're looking at a mirror or something, but in the moment, we don't know what we look like. Other people in the environment know what we look like, but we don't know what we look like, meaning we can become very biased because whatever emotional state we're in, how internally our thoughts influence our emotions. That's the CBT. In short, our thoughts influence our emotions. And that's important because our emotions influence how we behave and act, not dictate, but influence. This is all a bias, you know, like tunnel that we're going through. And when we kind of take a step back or have a, you know, another person, a trained professional kind of highlight certain things for us, it's like, huh, I didn't really pay too much attention to that behavior I was doing. I didn't recognize that pattern I was doing. And then, like you said, the insight starts to build. And from there, we can make a more informed decision on how we want to address anything that we want to address.
Exactly. Like you become your own therapist in a way. And that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. Your therapist is trying to help you become autonomous in that mm-hmm. self-reflection so that you can go home and say, you know what, I don't like how I handled this situation, or whoa, this triggered me. Let's kind of reflect on what could have caused that. And you start doing that on your own and start requiring therapy less and less.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
No, absolutely. Because, and you touched on it perfectly where, you know, the goal of therapy isn't to be in therapy forever. Now, granted, depending on the reasons you're coming into therapy, like some people know automatically, like, hey, I'm here for X, Y, and Z reasons. Depending on the nature of the reason why you're coming into therapy, that will influence the length of therapy as far as like how long you're there for. Mm-hmm. But therapy isn't made to last forever. If you're there just kind of working through life stressor, life transition, like moving, getting a new job, a breakup, something, things of that nature. Let's say if it's more like self-esteem related issues where depending on the severity of it, that could take a bit more time, right? But even going back to what you were originally asking about, you know, just removing toxic, the masculinity and the perception and everything like that. I definitely encourage everyone just seeking out a consultation with the therapist and for men in particular, joining, you know, support groups, talking to other men, because if someone is going through life by themselves, and I'm using air quotes because I'm more so talking about those conversations that you don't feel comfortable having with other people. Again, not saying you don't got anyone that love or care about you, but just certain conversations you don't feel comfortable having with the people in your life, that starts to feel heavy.
Yeah.
And that can start to, we may start to display certain behaviors or actions like unhealthy forms of coping, trying to kind of get a need met. And if it's a unhealthy form of coping, and what I call unhealthy is, if it has a significant enough consequence to it, whether, you know, you got to keep paying, keep taking something or whatever it may be, or just causing problems in your life in some way, shape or form. We want to make sure that we're addressing those things appropriately. So I am a big advocate in, you know, men going to support groups, men talking to other men, and in general for everyone, you know, seeking out therapy.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought up support groups, because I just had my first, my group counseling course this past semester, and it was absolutely fantastic. I didn't realize how much I would appreciate group therapy until then. Cause I had only ever gone to one-on-one, and, in this course, we, as a class, are group therapy, and they have two of my cohorts from higher semester come and lead the group. And I mean, we all left on our last day. Like, I can't believe how close we've all gotten this quickly. It really is so supportive when you have multiple people experiencing the same things that you do, and just a safe space for you to just spew all your shit out and leave and go home to your everyday life, and you're fine, you know, like go back to normal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, while we definitely, so we're not quote unquote bad, it just comes with the territory of being human, of experiencing emotions. And, you know, just humanizing it where insert life thing here. I imagine, you know, a lot of people are going to feel that, right? It could be a mix of frustration, jealousy, sad, like whatever the situation is, it could, you know, influence a set of emotions. But now it's, what do we do with them? We're not bad for having those emotions, but what do we do with them? And like you were saying, being able to have a supportive group of people going through the same experience or have went through the same experience. So that way you don't feel alone. You're able to kind of express yourself. And that makes us feel lighter and not let things build up like a volcano.
Yeah, big time. Well, So what has your experience been being a male counselor? And I'm curious, are female clients more inclined to go to a female and male clients more inclined to go to a male? And just what has your experience been?
So as far as the social work field as a whole, predominantly women. And when we niche down further into being a therapist, because, you know, with social work, you can, you know, do a variety of things, but going down this lane of being a therapist, same thing, mostly women. And what I saw in my experience, both working in the outpatient facility and in private practice for individual therapy, is one of the common things I would get from the clients is, oh, a male therapist. And then in particular, oh, a Black male therapist. And because we're rare, we're like unicorns in the field, right? So that has been like my main experience in the field of clients saying like, oh, wow, like, I didn't know you exist. Or, you know, we don't encounter too many male therapists or Black male therapists in particular. And for women, to be completely honest, if I'm combining both the outpatient clients I work with and in the private practice that I have, in my private practice, I work with one woman individually for a period of time. And it's pretty good, honestly. It's pretty good. Where generally speaking, people want to go with what's familiar because it tends to be more comfortable. But I will say for women as well, like, don't discount seeking a male therapist. Again, I know there are not as many of us out there compared to women, but I do think it's worth, you know, meeting with a male therapist because we have a different perspective on how we view things, just as women do. And as we talked about before, that natural bias, right? Like, yeah, we become so used to certain things, which is ourselves, we can't see ourselves. So getting a different, let me get a male's perspective on this. Of course, it's still, we're all therapists, right? The men and the women, but let me get a male therapist's view on, you know, my situation. So I definitely encourage it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have, the two people that I've become closest with in my program are two males in the program because we started in the summer and it was only four people in both classes and we were in those classes together. And so we're around the same, we started that day. So the people that were with us might've been their second or third semester. So we're probably going to graduate the same year and we've just been like this and they're great. Like, they know and they're learning everything that the female therapists are learning. And I like your explanation on getting a male take on it because it is a different experience. And where's the harm in that? I mean, even if you start off with a female therapist and you want to say, okay, like, I've gotten this side of it, like, maybe let me jump to a different therapist and try it out. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely encouraged.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. You guys heard it here first.
Yes, yes. How can counselors make therapy a more open and welcoming experience for male clients?
So there's two parts to it. So one part is the therapeutic relationship. That's bar none. That is, we start the therapeutic relationship the moment we're in contact with each other. So the moment, you know, someone picks up the phone, calls and say, hey, is this Rayshon Ledette from Mental and Mind, that since that first initial contact, that's when it begins, right? Yeah. Because, and I actually had a consultation yesterday where the client was actually speaking to that of, he was like, you know, after we went through the consultation, he was like, you know, I connect with you. It seems like you really get it. Like, I feel comfortable. That's what you want. And again, that starts from the very first connection you have with them of, you know, when you pick up that phone.
Yeah.
So making sure, you know, you have a strong therapeutic relationship with the client or even potential client. And the other part is how you advertise and market yourself, because someone wants to feel, you know, welcome, right? Think about even the stores that you shop at, the places you go. You know, if you're having a sense of, I don't know if I feel so welcome here for whatever reason, right? Even down to the I know, like with the business and the marketing, get down to like even the colors they choose for their business and everything like that, but more so just marketing a bit more to men. Hey, you know, we also provide therapy services for men. We have consultations here, and even adding, you know, something a bit extra for them, where if we know that men are more on the fence, more hesitant to engage in therapy, even coming up with something to make them seeking that consultation call more attractive to them. Like, let's say you extend it. Hey, for men, we're doing 30-minute consultation calls, right? Because if we want to convert them to clients so that, you know, we can help them and whatever version of, we can get them to whatever version of better they're in seek of, you know, what's an extra 10 minutes right for that client that may not have engaged in that consultation call? So again, advertising on your platforms, like for men, giving them some more incentive to actually want to engage. I think those things would be pretty, pretty helpful and beneficial.
I never thought of that. That's really smart. Truly. I mean, just, it's like the, your first impression everywhere. It's the same thing mm-hmm. when you're giving your first impression to what it's going to be like working with this counselor, and especially mm-hmm. just remaining open and understanding to anyone's experience.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think back to, ultimately like the customer service of everything. Cause when we look at everything, like even if I'm going to a dentist for the first time, my thought isn't, unless I'm getting something done like very like special and I need a specialist for that thing, my thought isn't, I hope this dentist is qualified to check my teeth or whatever the case may be. Yeah. I'm more so paying attention to like the customer service. Like when I walk in, how does the building appear? The people at the front desk, are they nice? Do they greet me? You know, did they say like, hello, good morning? You know, all of those things like that creates, and that's with restaurants, everything that creates a good experience. I don't go into a restaurant thinking like, I hope that they, well, if I'm a new restaurant, I hope the food is good, but I don't think like, oh, I hope they know how to cook. Like I'm thinking like, I wonder how my experience is going to be mm-hmm. with this person, with this, at this organization, et cetera. So, and it's the same thing for therapy.
Yeah, definitely. So, again, I wanted to thank you for talking with me today. And I want to ask where the listeners can find you and follow you.
No, thank you. I appreciate you for having me, Sam. My website, Mental and Mind. So Mental, MentalInMind, mentalandmind.com. And for the social media, mainly my Instagram right now, which is also Mental and Mind. That's where I post all my updates and everything. And I have two support groups and one book club currently going. This was actually the first week that I started them up. So on Monday, it's a support group for men. All the information is on my Instagram page. It's free. It happens weekly. And again, those are on Mondays from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time. On Wednesdays is the book club. Right now we're reading No More Mr. Nice Guy. Highly recommend that book. Check it out. In the Audible, I really enjoy his voice. And on Thursdays, I have a provider support group. So clinicians, they're like all that great stuff. Same time, 7 to 8 for all groups, the men's group on Monday, 7 to 8 book club, Wednesdays, 7 to 8 and the provider support group Thursdays, 7 to 8 We had two clinicians last night, and I got some more emails in of people that I want to attend next week. So yeah, mental and mind.
Great. I will be sure to put that in the description of the podcast episode so y'all can go follow and tag on the Instagram. Thank you so much again. And I hope that everyone took away something from this episode.
Nice. Thank you, Sam, for having me. I definitely appreciate it.
Okay. You have a great day.
You too.
Today's music was written and produced by Tyler O'Brien. You can find him on Instagram at Dreamscape, DREAMSCAPE, and follow his band at Wastelander_band on Instagram.